Today's guest is Alicia Upana, a writer who hails from Hawaii. In this podcast, she discusses her experiences growing up in Hawaii as well as the local culture. We also speak to her about her collaborative contribution with Mayo Satoru Ng to the Asian American Literary Review's special issue on mixed race. Alicia is interviewed by Chandra, Fanshan, and Mark, co-curators of Mixed Roots Stories, and special guest host Maggie Yin.
What is your mixed roots story?
My mixed roots story starts in Hawaii, where I was born to two parents who were from elsewhere. My father's family is from the Philippines. They left right before martial law and came to Hawaii in the late 60s. We had been there, my grandfather had been there since 1930, starting as a cane cutter in the sugar plantations, and had gone back to the Philippines as a U.S. soldier. My grandfather was a long time, like many Ilocanos, was a cook in the military, and he was stationed in the Philippines, and he was on the edge of retirement, and they chose to retire instead of in the Philippines on U.S. soil, likely because better opportunities for their children. And that just happened to be before a great deal of things changed in that country. And then my mother is from San Francisco, and she came to Hawaii a couple years before I was born. And so that's where I started. That's my story.
In your early years, did you have a sense of mixedness, or do you kind of remember any early moments that stand out for you of feeling like you were cross-cultural or in a blended family in any way?
Sure, sure. This is a great question. So I, as I mentioned in the piece, Hawaii is the most multi-ethnic, multicultural state in the union. And so kind of being a Hapa girl was not a big deal. You know, a lot of my friends were mixed as well. If anything, it was, it was more the norm. And I sort of grew up with that. But what was interesting, I think, about my experience versus folks who might have had my similar ethnic makeup but grew up on the mainland was that I had inherited a lot of my mother's European features. You know, I had paler skin, I've got a pointy nose. And I remember really wanting to look like everybody else who was darker, you know, as sort of being a young girl who wanted to fit in. Definitely the parts of myself, the kind of my whiteness that was apparent in my features didn't really serve me.
Interesting. I mean, some kind of a counter-hegemonic idea. Mm-hmm. Would you say that is the case in Hawaii, or it was just for you? So many stories about the mixed experience, especially early on, are about people who needed even to embrace being lighter or being able to pass. So what was it, what kind of messages did you get that led you to wanting to be darker or
sure.
to look non-European, let's say?
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of it was wanting just to sort of fit in with the majority, right? But I also think that given Hawaii's history, there's a lot of strife, you know, American businessmen came, well, let's start with Captain Cook, you know, decimated, I think, 80% of the indigenous Hawaiian population. And then American businessmen came and pretty much took over and overthrew the Hawaiian kingdom. And so, I mean, those are huge things, but there's definitely this sense of sort of whiteness as power that is very apparent in Hawaii, in my opinion. And there's this sort of sense that of not belonging. Because in Hawaii, to me, what matters much more so than your ethnic background is whether you belong or you don't, whether you're local or you're not. And so there's this sense that there's whiteness that does not overlap with localness. Obviously, you can be white and local, but there is this kind of question. And I know growing up that friends of mine, for example, and myself, there were certain stereotypes, these negative stereotypes that would be attached to us as a result of the way that we looked. And, I mean, I would have friends in high school who would just get beat up because they were, you know, the howly kid walking down the block.
Oh, can you talk about some of those names? So you said Howley Kid. So mm-hmm. will you?
Sure. So Howley is sort of the term that we use for, it technically means somebody who's not from Hawaii, but in practice, it actually means just somebody who's white in Hawaii.
And did you use the term hapa there?
I did. Yep. Mm-hmm. Very common.
What does it mean to you?
You know, it's funny. I mean, I would say it means somebody that's mixed. And then there's this, a little bit of debate. Do they have to be mixed? Do they have to be half Asian or part Asian to use the term hapa? I'd say, you know, just because there's so many different mixes in Hawaii. You know, I imagine there's so many different mixes everywhere, but particularly because of our ethnic makeup and our history that have kind of brought all of these groups there. It's anybody who's mixed.
Mm. And so did you ever get to the point where you felt like, okay, I am comfortable in my skin, or and were there any catalysts for that? Like, how did your parents did nurture you or not in terms of mixedness?
My parents had very different experiences. You know, my dad was a Filipino man, and my mom was a white lady on the island, and she did tough work. You know, she was a social worker for the state. And for many years, and she always would say, for example, that she knew that she had made progress with her clients when she went from the fucking Holly to the lady.
Right.
Like, the lady is here. and so she knew she was connecting. And so I think that I saw Hawaii through their experiences as well. And I think, to be honest, you know, my parents did an incredible job of just sort of accepting me as I was and the complexity that was Hawaii. I actually think, you know, what's interesting to me, and maybe we might get into this a little bit later, but I think this sort of awareness, the way that I speak about things now, only became clear to me as I got older. As I started to exist in spaces that were not nearly as diverse as the ones that I grew up in. So I opted to go to college. I had a little bit of island fever. You know, you grew up in the most geographically isolated place on the planet. you want to see places. And so I went to college in rural Massachusetts at a public university that was 80% in-state, 80% white. And they made a big deal about how diverse they were. But from my perspective, it was like a far, far cry from what I had come from.
Right.
And I sort of realized, having felt like sort of like the, you know, the white girl in the crowd that I had run in at home,
suddenly
the ethnic kid, you know, and it really sort of, I think, opened my eyes and made me aware in a way that even my friends who had stayed in Hawaii and my friends who had like existed in very diverse spaces like LA or New York, and I think it's because of that experience and being in a very homogenous space.
I like that you talk about that because it's all about perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I come from Idaho, and when I moved to Arizona, I was like, wow, it's really diverse here compared to Idaho. But then if you talk to other ethnicities here, they feel like it's not very diverse. And so it really is about your perspective growing up and the influences on your perspective there and then going to another place and their perspective is different, and that really opens your eyes to, okay, well, where do I fit?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like my center had shifted.
Mm.
Or actually, maybe my center had never shifted, but I was like, I am far from center. But certainly, you know, when I was in Phoenix, Chandra, I had come from San Diego, talk about perspective, and I, you know, also very close to Mexico.
Right.
And I was like, where are all the Mexicans? I'm in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Where is everybody?
Which is funny because if you talk to certain populations in Phoenix, they'll say there's too many and they're all over the place and what are we going to do about all these people? But then you go to San Diego and you're right, it's different.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're there.
So, Alicia, what about relationships-wise? Like, did you start to seek out, in fact, because Lawrence talked about you two meeting, when you two met, and that you just kind of had this connection over mixedness.
Mm-hmm.
So what did that mean for relationships for you?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I think that I have always been attracted to other people who have experiences of mixedness. And what I mean by that is not just ethnic, but really kind of a mixed experience And especially now that I've been on the mainland for 15 years, it's people whose boundaries sort of cross over what you would think of as the typical American experience. So I'm not sure there is a typical American experience, but I'm very interested in that. I mean, obviously, I feel close to people from home who share my experience of being like a local girl on the mainland. Also, I think people who are also grappling with the same thing, but in different contexts, right? My partner is Puerto Rican who grew up in New England, right? So that's a mixed experience in and of itself, you know, and so on and so forth. I'm in Oakland now, and I meet so many people who kind of straddle that line, and I find it so fascinating because we're all, I feel like, negotiating something.
So this is Mark. I was curious, so you mentioned so growing up in Hawaii and having mm-hmm. a sense of otherness, but not so much, more about striving to be more like everybody else. But then when you left and came to the mainland, it just became more acute. So mm-hmm. I was curious, in your creative writing, does that inform your creative writing? Because I noticed that pattern in your, when you submitted to the Asian American Literary Review,
mm-hmm.
was like the crossing. It seemed like this longing for, I mean, is there a longing to return to that sense of being part of something that you didn't have to, you weren't so other?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mark. I think that one thing about Hawaii that I will say, and it's very easy for me, I will say this, it's very easy for me as somebody who's been far away to be very nostalgic, you know, because the reality is that life is really hard in Hawaii. There are many people who are struggling. It is not the vision of paradise that everybody thinks. But I will say it is the closest thing in my heart to home. Still, that's true all of these years later. And there's a lot growing up in Hawaii about, again, belonging. There's a lot about belonging. And I think that's how people manage, you know, through sort of hardship and leaving their home countries to come to Hawaii and kind of finding family with each other. And so loving the island despite hardship, loving each other, being there for each other. And there's this sense that when you leave that there's this kind of question, do you belong anymore? You know, if you're not physically there, how much of Hawaii do you take with you? And I certainly think that it's something that I think of often, and I think it's certainly the kernel, as I say in my piece, of all my stories.
Alicia, you mentioned earlier that Hawaii is the most ethnically diverse member of the union. And I just wanted to know, what are your thoughts on how maybe Hawaii has come to symbolize more of like a vacation destination than anything else in like popular culture? Like, what are your thoughts on how it's portrayed in like, media, like movies or?
So there's this commodified version of Hawaii. And it's beautiful. I mean, if I'm not from Hawaii, I'd love to visit Hawaii, but it's not my Hawaii. That's all I can say. Like, it's not mine. It doesn't feel real to me. And I think that it's something that a lot of places actually have to deal with. I mean, Hawaii just happens to be in the tropics and in the United States, but if you look anywhere in the Caribbean, any other place that's having to sell itself to sort of survive, that there is going to be a divide between what is sold and what it truly exists.
Interesting.
I'm like a Marxist.
It's interesting because there's been a lot of talk in about mixed individuals and how they've become a commodity as well in the media and public and advertising. So it's interesting the parallels of Hawaii being, you know, a place of a lot of mixed heritage and then now mixed people kind of following in that just in general. So it's very, very interesting. Looking at the time, I want to move into talking a little bit about your piece. And if you could tell us a little bit what about the idea behind your submission to the special edition, AALR special edition, and how your specific piece came to be.
Absolutely. So I was contacted by Lauren because he, Maya Satoru Ng, was interested in contributing to the special issue on mixed race, and every piece in the issue is collaborative in nature to sort of emphasize this idea of mixedness. And so Maya lives on Oahu, And Lawrence and I, you know, are good friends, and I've worked with him on AALR for a number of years, and he thought of me, you know, as somebody from Hawaii who writes about Hawaii, and connected me with Maya. And so Maya was wonderful. She was just great to work with. And so we sort of just threw some ideas around, and she was really drawn the rhythmic narrative of writers like Gloria Anzaldúa. And so we tossed around, like, how can we both talk about our experiences in a kind of a structure that will allow us to write this piece together, but also give us a lot of room to sort of explore. And so we decided upon doing three sections each, and they would each represent past, present, and future. And so, and what's interesting about it is I think that even within a structure, you can see there's two very different perspectives and different voices, but they're both coming from this mixed space as two people who are bound up in Hawaii on different sides of the ocean.
When I read your piece, I noticed that Maya's portion uses Hawaiian words and, like, the local dialect, but yours kind of didn't feature that as much.
Sure.
And I just wondered, was that a conscientious decision, or did it come about organically?
That's a great question. So I think there's a couple things at play there. Maya has been in multicultural ed for a long, long time, and so there are certain things that she's tuned into as a result of her presence on the island and her work that I'm not. And the other thing with, like, pidgin, I speak pidgin when I'm on the island, but it's very contextual for me. I can't do it when I'm not there. It feels false to me. And so I was writing this from Oakland. But I think a lot as a writer and as a reader, I think a lot about narrative distance. You know, how close or far are you from the thing that you are reading or writing? And I think, I could have never foreseen this, but I'd say that when I look at the piece that we did together now, I think that you can tell that my pieces are very close to the island, as she is close to the island, and that my pieces are a bit further away, like I'm kind of like looking through a little telescope at a farther distance.
It works out very well for the piece, though, because as you kind of alluded to earlier, it does really do a wraparound perspective. Because you have someone there and then from the outside, and so you get this, like, kind of wraparound view of mixedness on the island and from the island, but not at the island. So, it definitely comes through in the piece.
I would have to say, just sharing my personal story in regards to researching my roots and learning about my background in Hawaii, and, you know, with the Portuguese and coming from the Azores and working in the sugarcane fields, reading your stories was very powerfully moving. I felt that longingness to return to something that meant something.
Absolutely. I think it can mean exactly that. I think it can mean a lot of things. You know, I think that sort of physically, it's like me, here I am in Oakland speaking to all of you, And pointing to Hawaii, as I am. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm pointing to Hawaii. I'm remembering Hawaii. I'm exploring the parts of me that are Hawaii, you know? And I think when I'm there, I also point to Oakland, you know? And so it becomes this thing. And there's a lot of reasons why I would point to Oakland, you know? I've become an adult on the mainland. And, you know, I have my own space. I have a partner. I have a job. Like, I kind of exist in the world in a different way, right? Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, like, the story is a loop, is speaking about space, but also speaking about stages of life, you know? Like, who I was there is also bound up in, like, who I was 18 and younger.
Right.
And that was incredibly formative to me. And then who I am here is a kind of me becoming a woman and what that means. And so, and trying to reconcile this, I'm still figuring it out.
You haven't figured it out. I was hoping you would tell us.
Well, when you figure it out, I look forward to reading about it.
Thank you.
Another question is, how do you hope your experiences or your piece in the
special issue will affect or impact future generations?
I think that that's a great question about how this will affect future generations, but I think that it's a very hard one for me to answer simply because I am a storyteller, you know, and I can only hope that we continue to talk about these things. We continue to talk about all the voices and all the story in this big, big world and, frankly, this big, big country. I do think that Hawaii has a place in the American narrative, and I hope its stories come forth more and more, especially as our country becomes more and more diverse. I think we have lessons to share.
What impact do you think personal stories can have on kind of social justice issues?
I mean, I think that in terms of this larger conversation about the way that we talk about race, I certainly think it's important that we not ignore the systemic issues that have brought us to this place in history, right? I think mm-hmm. history is really important. I also think that our histories are are full of personal stories, and we live those histories every single day. And so I'm sort of one of these believers that I've always been a reader, and I love stories. I do. I absolutely love them. And I think what they give me is they have always expanded my empathy and my kind of understanding of the world. And I have to believe that there's a place for that.
Beautiful. Well, this has been such a pleasure, and given all of the things that you're doing, we're so glad you took the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
And can't wait to share your story with others.
Mixed Root Stories Podcast wants to thank Alicia Upano for being our guest and to Maggie Yin for being our first student moderator. And we want to send a special thank you to Rachel Antu, also known as the singer and the songwriter, who created our wonderful jingle. Thanks also to John Crump and Terry LaFleche of TightlyCurly.com for helping with our website, and to Benjamin and Tamika at Zerflin.com for designing our logo. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes, and we appreciate our review. You can find all the links you need at www.mixedrootstories.org. We can't wait to hear your story.